She Did It Her Way podcast, episode 240, how to determine which social media outlet that's right for your business with Rachel Hollis.
Hello and welcome to She Did It Her Way, a podcast dedicated to helping you launch a business that allows you the freedom to create from anywhere, design your own schedule in a way that supports you, and pursue what it is that lights you up. I'm Amanda Boleyn, your host, and it is time to do it your way. Do you ever feel like you can't and don't know what to do next? Maybe you're unsure of how to shift your business in a saturated market, or you've listened to experts on how to solve problems, but your gut is telling you otherwise. Well, then today's episode is for you as we sit down with Rachel Hollis, founder and CEO of Chic Media and the Chic site, also a mother and an author, because Rachel has also faced similar questions while transitioning from a high-end event planner to a profit-making blogger. Rachel creates content for the affordable yet chic shopper, the cool but not fancy creator, the delicious but achievable chef. So in this episode, we talk about how to gain traction in terms of profit, not just being noticed, understand why having a clear brand voice is crucial to your business, along with managing the challenges of content creation and so much more. So let's dive in.
All right, friends, we are hanging out with Rachel Hollis. This is now take three. Oh my gosh, it's been a crazy day now. It's a crazy day for me.
I'm giving you my crazy.
I'm like sweating over here. I'm like, I'm never going to do this many takes. But anyway, I digress. We've got Rachel Hollis, who is the founder and CEO of Chic Media. She's a mother. She also has multiple books coming out, and or she has multiple books already that came out, and then she's got one that actually released today. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's today. Today is the big day.
Yes. And you're like, you're talking to us while you like basically gave birth today. I am very honored and humbled.
Oh, yeah. No, of course. I'm so grateful to be here. I'm super passionate about the idea of women in business and women not only working toward a career, but working toward building something. So I love the opportunity to chat with you and your audience.
Yes, I love it. Well, I'm not going to say anymore. I'm going to just have you take it away and tell us how your journey started out and the transition and how you got to where you are today. And then we'll just dive in.
Cool. So I actually was a high-end event planner in Los Angeles for about a decade. I really loved it in the beginning. I loved planning parties. I loved the chaos and the hustle and finding new clients. And it really does start to wear on you after a while. If you've ever had to deal with a crazy bride, then you can understand what my life was like every single weekend for 10 years. And I had started to think of maybe transitioning out of that and what I would do next. And I had started this blog as a way to market my events company and started to kind of find my voice there. And at some point, a brand reached out to me and said, hey, we want to put our product in your blog and we want to give you $250. And I was like, well, I am rich. Like, I've just figured out how to make money as a blogger, which like nobody knew how to do.
And this when was this? Like what year?
Like I want to say 2007, maybe.
The right time to get into
it. This is the heyday. This is like I people always ask, like, how do you start and become a successful blogger? I'm like, go back to 2007 and start then. Which sounds like super harsh, but I think like anything else, like Instagrammers or YouTubers, there really is power in being an early adopter. And I kind of got to ride that wave of blogging. And I think probably the difference between me and other people who were doing the same thing is because I had come from running this business for 10 years, I immediately started looking for how the blog could be its own revenue stream. How could it support itself? How could we make this into something bigger? And eventually over the next few years, I transitioned where, you know, at some point I was doing 75% events and 25% of the blog, and then it was 50-50. And then I just went all the way in. And I knew in order to grow it the way that I wanted it to be, I would have to hire a staff and I would have to have some creatives to help me, because I knew how to write and I know how to make a home or make a beautiful dinner, but being able to take a picture of that and visually present it to the world beautifully is hard. So, so I started growing the Chic site and turned it into what it is today. And over, gosh, I want to say maybe 3 years ago, brands started to reach out to us, not just to incorporate their products into our posts, but would we consider creating white label content for them? So that's when you're creating digital content that they own the rights to completely, that in fact appears as if they are the ones who made it, but really it was my creative team here at Chic. So some of the biggest brand partners we've ever had, we've had behind the scenes and nobody knows that they're our clients. So yeah, so that's what has led me to where we are as a company today. For me personally, I had always wanted to be an author, like my entire life. When I was a little girl was the first time that I realized someone wrote books and I wanted to be someone who wrote a book. And so, gosh, 2014, I was writing a book and the blog had become more popular and a lit agent reached out to me, which never happens in the history of the world. Literary agents don't ever call people.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Like, I was like, well, this is clearly, I'm about to win a Pulitzer. I was ready. And I thought, we're done. Like the dream's coming true. It's here. And she said, hey, have you ever thought about writing a book? And I was like, have I ever? I've got, you know, 7 manuscripts you can read. Here you go. I am a massive book nerd. And at the time I was writing fiction and I said, hey, can I send you this fiction that I'm working on? She read it and she was like, well, this story is insane. But she's like, oh, I was actually thinking about having you do a coffee table book, but let me see if I can think of a way that we could marry like the idea of a coffee table book and the fact that you were this high-end event planner and the idea that you want to write fiction. And she called me back about a week later and said, hey, have you ever thought about writing a Romana Clay, which is when you write, I know, right? I'd never heard of that.
Heard of that.
Yep. And if you try and spell it, that's going to confuse you even more.
How do you spell it?
You spelled Roman, RomanaClef.
Oh, so, yeah, no.
Right? What in the world? But basically, it's when you're writing about real celebrities, but you change the name so people don't know who you're talking about. So Devil Wears Prada is a great example of that. So she said, would you ever consider writing your version of doing celebrity weddings and celebrity events, but change the name so you don't get sued? And I was like, oh my, yes, I will. And I sat down and I wrote, 5,000 words. And I sent her and she said, famous last words, well, I can sell this all day long. And so I promptly stopped parenting. I stopped being a wife. I stopped doing anything but writing this book. And, well, now I feel like I've gone down such a long tangent, but I feel like I have to finish.
Oh, no, keep going.
Piece. Okay, so I write this book about me moving to LA and getting thrust into this world of high-end event planning, and we send it to every publisher in the world, and I'm just thinking, here's my big break, because I thought in my head, oh, if I just finish a book, then I'll be an author. And we sent it to everyone, and every single publisher in New York turned the book down, said nobody would read it, said it was too sweet, said all the things. And when the very last publisher called on the very last day, I was devastated, just literally closed my bathroom door, sobbing on the floor. And I cried for about half an hour. And then I got up off the ground and I poured myself a glass of wine in the kitchen. And I
like
Googled.
Any smart woman. No.
Yes. I Googled, how do you self-publish a book? Because I was like, wait, I have a book. It's done. And I figured out how to self-publish. And the book that, nobody would read slowly started to sell. And one friend would tell another and someone would pass it to somebody else. And 6 months later, a publisher called and said, hey, we see that this book that you self-published is doing really, really well. We want to buy it. We want to turn it into a series. And that was the start of my publishing career. Love that story, because I always like to remind women especially that nobody, not even an expert in their field, gets to tell you how big your dreams can be. And today my sixth book came out into the world. And if I had listened to every single person who were the experts, that first book would still be sitting on my computer. And I don't know if I would be an author today.
That's really powerful to think about that, because Matt, I mean, we all know how many times every day or every week we show up, we do something, or someone tells us their opinion and their advice. And I mean, it is their opinion. And it just goes to show that just because someone says something doesn't mean that it's the truth, and we can define mm-hmm. what that truth is for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think today the access that we have, the resources that we have available on the internet for free, are unparalleled when it comes to building a company, producing creative, getting in touch with people. I mean, there's just never in the history of time has there been so much access and so much possibility. And I am deeply passionate about the idea that every single thing you want to know how to do, whether it's build a company, write a book, be a better mom, run a half marathon, whatever it is, the answer to it exists right now for free and is accessible to you through a Google search bar. I have built a company, like everything I know how to do, I have taught myself. And so I get super fired up about the idea that women think they can't, or they're not sure how, or they don't know what to do next. I'm like, sister, get your act together. You can control what happens next. You can arm yourself with the resources and the knowledge, and you can make smart choices to get you to the next step.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, let's drop the mic right there. No, but there's still so much that I want to dive into as well. And I love that segue into it. And just to recap, where in terms of a timeline, chronological order, so you transitioned from your wedding event planning in, when did you make the full leap? Because you talked, I want to dive in a little bit more about how you strategically started doing, okay, 75% of your time was your mm-hmm. wedding, and then the 25% of the other time was your building into the website, which now is, correct me if I'm wrong, the Chic Media, or Chic Media.
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
Yes. Yeah. So that's the parent company. So I'm trying to think of exactly what year that I made. So I did a really pretty daring thing for me, which was I went from an event planning company that was fully sustainable and profitable to having the events that kind of funded the idea of doing a blog, and all the way to where I thought, okay, if I'm going to do this for real, and I want to say this was maybe 2013, if I'm going to do this for real, I'm actually going to hire a staff. So that was four people. It was a photographer. I originally got my start. I was most known for being a food blogger. So I needed someone who could help me develop recipes. I needed someone who could shoot food photography. I had to hire all of these people. And so I made this really drastic choice for myself, which was, for the first time ever, I was going to take everything that I had in savings from the events and fully invest it into the blog, not knowing yet if it would be profitable. So as an event planner, you can kind of look at your year, you can book out a certain number of contracts and go, okay, well, we've got, you know, $500,000 coming in revenue, so I can plan my resources. I know I can hire this staff. But with the blog, it was the first time that I went out on a limb and just decided, hey, I'm gonna hire these people and cross my fingers and just hope this all doesn't crash and burn. So we launched the Chic site as you can see it today, like the version that it is today, at the end of 2013, I want to say October. And it just immediately started to get traction in terms of notice, but it wasn't traction in terms of profit. And so I had to work really hard to figure out how to do this, because at the time, now blogging had become a thing and people paid for it. But then all of a sudden, everybody and their mom was a blogger. And anytime your market gets saturated like that, the price for you goes down. So all of a sudden, people who were paying for access to our audience were like, hey, would you consider doing this post for a lifetime supply of Pop Chips?
Oh,
and I was like, what are you talking about?
You're like, no.
Yeah, so the event planning background really came in handy, because in event planning I had these corporate clients, And I thought, man, that's what we need to do. We can't keep doing these little one-off things where someone pays me to wear a shirt one time or I rock a new pair of shoes. I need a corporate client. I need brands that are at a really big level that we can commit to, you know, 3 posts in a year, and suddenly we're doing massive jobs that are $100,000 versus, you know, this tiny little one-off for $1,000 here or there. I don't know if I'm getting into too much detail for you.
No. I love this. And I have follow-up questions too.
Yeah. So I had learned with event clients that it wasn't about, like, that first year in business, I'm making up a number, but let's say I had like 52 clients. Like, it was bananas. Like, I'm working every weekend. Some weekends I'm doing 2 events a weekend. And then over the time it was like, oh no, sister, the goal is not how many jobs you can do. The goal is how much you can make on individual jobs. So suddenly you're focusing on maybe 10 events a year, but those events are giving you the revenue of, you know, 5 of the old ones, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, that definitely does. So then when you started changing the events, I think I want to go back to you were saying about the content. So when the market started becoming saturated, how did you change or pivot or shift the way that you did the business then? I mean, it's shift the business in a way to still profit. And I know you were talking about events before. Is that the same concept of what you did with the blog as well?
Yeah, I think one of the best lessons that I have learned in the history of my career, and I think this applies to everybody listening, no matter what it is you're doing or what stage you are in your process, is having a really clear brand voice. And that can be if it's, you know, if you're a staff of 12 or if you're, you know, just one person with an Etsy shop. What I mean by brand voice is you have to know really clearly who you are, what you stand for, what, you know, colors you use, what the things that you talk about. And when I first started out in the blogging world, I kind of did what I saw other people doing. I wasn't really sure of my voice. And so I did a little bit of everything. And honestly, I was a high-end event planner. So I was doing these really elaborate parties. And I thought, oh, well, I'll do a blog showing beautiful pictures of our really beautiful parties. And nobody cared. And then I thought, okay, well, I'll do a blog where I show really beautiful parties and the details around them, and then I'll show you how to get that at home for less. And nobody cared. And one day I wasn't really sure what else to talk about, and I decided to write about a dip that my mom used to make when I was a little girl. And as a point of reference, I grew up on a street called Weed Patch Highway. Which is not like an affectionate name from the locals, like legit.
Where are you originally from?
So I'm from Bakersfield, which is about 2 hours north of LA.
Oh,
well, then you know, sister. And the thing is, I'm not even from Bakersfield. I'm from like a small town on the outskirts of a small town. So
we were
in the country. We are country folk.
Yeah.
And so one day I decided to write about this dip, which is completely off brand, not fancy at all, whatever. But I write about it, and all of a sudden I start getting notes from people because they're like, oh my gosh, I had that dip. Oh my gosh, I loved it. Oh, my mom did it this way. Oh, she, and I was like, oh my gosh, there's something to like this idea of down home, because those were my people, my family on both sides, originally from Oklahoma, I have big Southern roots. And so I started to really, honestly, for the first time, write authentically and cook authentically and be true to those roots and who I was. And so the differentiating factor for me was that in a world of people who were doing fancy and precious and all of these beautiful whatevers, I was over here telling you how to make, you know, a casserole with 7 cheeses in it. And that really, I know it sounds like such a silly thing, but it set me apart from the competition, because if you know your niche and you can speak to a very specific market, well, there are brands and products who want access to that very specific person. So by really figuring out who we were and what we stood for, we started to get attention and we started to get clients without having to work so hard for them.
What have been some of the challenges or experiences from yourself of being a content creator, and how do you manage to stay on top of it from the calendar standpoint, production? How do you manage it all?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest
things. I mean, aside from wine, right?
Sure. Yeah. Wine, vodka, all the things. I think one of the biggest things that we have to pay attention to if you're producing any kind of content is you've got to look at the market. You just absolutely have to know what is relevant right now. What is, and I don't mean what's trending. Like I, you know, a Kardashian had a baby. Like I, that has nothing to do with me. But what I mean is, how are people consuming media? So I jokingly said earlier, people say, "Oh, I want to start a blog. How can I have a successful blog?" And I say, "Go back to 2007." It's because blogs are not relevant in the way that they were 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago, or even a year ago. I would say now that Instagram is the new blog. I would say that social media in a lot of ways is way more relevant because we as a society don't tend to go to websites. We consume our media inside of a news feed that we watch on social media. So if you're still like I was, there was a time where we produced 5 pieces of new content every single week, Monday through Friday. And that was just the game. Like that's what you did 5 years ago. You had to have that many posts. Mm-hmm. And some people had 4 times that many to get clicks on your site, which was how you got paid. That's not a thing now. And if you're over there beating your head against the wall and producing all this beautiful content and crying because nobody's going to your site, well, gosh, there's so many ways to produce content for your tribe. You just need to make sure you're doing it in the right way. So I think, yeah, you've got to, you know, content is king and it always will be, but you need to pay attention to how we consume it, what kind of media matters, and how you can serve them in a way that they, A, are going to see it, because P.S., most social platforms are going to keep your audience from receiving this information unless you pay for it. Mm. And B, you want to make sure that when they do see it, it's the quality you would want it to be, it's the message you would want it to be, and it's something that's going to add value to their lives.
Yeah. I mean, and so you guys have scaled down from doing the five posts a day, because then how often do you guys produce?
Yeah. So we produce very rarely for the site anymore. Honestly, we still have the brand partners that we have, but we try and guide them away from that now because I think it's a waste of their money. I think you're much better off. Let's say you're a shoe company and you want me to show people your new line of shoes. I think you're much better off using that budget to have us do a photo shoot, have us make a YouTube video, have us put that out on multiple platforms more than one time. That's going to serve our audience better and the brand better. But we very rarely do website posts anymore just because we don't find we're still super blessed. I think anyone who's had a site as long as I have had a site can tell you that they're still getting great traffic because of Pinterest, because those recipes that have been relevant for the last 5 years are still bringing traffic in. But new stuff is not what it used to be.
Yeah. I mean, that it's extremely humble, like for you just to say, you know, it's not often that someone would receive an opportunity to earn revenue and then say, hey, by the way, actually, it doesn't make sense for you. So how did you guys ensure that? I mean, I know you said you guys produce the white labeling behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Have you found that companies are open to that more so these days versus just doing straight up like, hey, put our product in your post, that type of exchange?
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you have people who are listening who want to be in that space where you're an influencer or you're endorsing, I think, well, let me say 2 things about it. One is the idea that I said about telling the client this isn't going to be great for you. This again comes from those days where I was an event planner and I didn't just want you as a client once. I wanted you as a client every year. And if you come to me, if you're JCPenney and you come to me and you say that you want something and I just am excited about that check and I don't care at all about how it performs or that it succeeds where you need it to succeed, you're never going to come back to me again. Mm-hmm. Now, incidentally, JCPenney is one of our biggest clients because every single time they come to us with a campaign, we're like, you tell us what the goal is. Is the goal to sell a jacket? Is the goal to drive people to your Facebook page? Is the goal to have the most engaged live stream of the year? Like, if you tell me what your goal is, then I can tell you how we can serve that purpose. But so often influencers are just taking the money and run, or you see this all the time on Instagram, where someone's like literally holding a bottle of shampoo, or they're holding, I saw this the other day, this influencer that I really like, she's a fashion grammar and gorgeous, and her outfits are so cute, and she's like sitting at a desk, and behind her is shower gel just like randomly on the desk behind her. And she wrote a post that isn't in her normal voice at all, so someone else has written it for her. It's shower gel. She's sitting in an office. So it's like, you didn't even try. You didn't even put it in your shower. You didn't even make us believe for a second that you actually cared about this product. You didn't serve your brand well. Like, so many things about that make me cringe. So I'm like, man, you're not even trying to serve. Like, on at the end of the day, no matter what business you're in, your goal should be to offer more value than anybody else. You want to offer more value to your audience online. How can I serve this tribe? How can I give them information that's going to be helpful, that they're going to find that's fun? How can I offer more value to my customers? So a lot of times, you know, people will come to me because I have this huge audience of women who follow me. But that means that I'm really good at knowing what women want, because every single day I've got 1,000 direct messages of women telling me what they want and how they want it. So I am using that to educate my clients. It's not just, hey, can you produce this thing for us? It's like, oh, well, let me tell you that right now, the thing we're hearing most from moms is that they're really struggling with fill in the blank. And I think that if we found a way to answer that question for them, and your product was behind it, now you're the one offering value. Now you're the brand that cares about what's happening with them. So, gosh, it's more than just like get that check and run. It's like, how can we serve these people in a really good way?
Mm-hmm. We have sponsors that come to us a lot, and we end up turning them down just because they don't necessarily fit within,
sure,
like our listeners. But then also I like to, one of the like screenings, if you will, is like, do I like the product? Have I used the product? Is it something that I believe in? And it could be a software. It could be type of clothing, or like Lola tampons, things like that.
Sure.
Like, if I use it, great. But in the beginning, I had to learn that you can't just take the money for the sake of taking the money, because what, like to you're saying with the brands and even clients, is like, how can we teach, tailor, and take control of the conversation? Mm-hmm. And we're going to have a stronger output and a stronger relationship because of that. And now working with brands or even sponsors for our events and stuff, it's the first question I ask is, what is your initiative? What do you want to accomplish? What are you looking for? ROI? Who's your target market? Like, how do people convert using your product? And so that way I can either say, hey, like, as much as I want a partner, this doesn't feel like a good fit and it wouldn't be a good use of your money. And as much as, again, I'd want to, but like, it just is, it's not going to serve anyone. And it took a while, like, learning that, but I'm just so like, I love that you shared that and the whole process and being able to shift the conversation.
Yeah. And I think it's so hard, especially when you're starting out, not to chase money. It's so dang hard. Mm-hmm. And I really want to encourage people who are listening, who are earlier in their careers or earlier in their businesses, that it is important to make money. Like, hello, it's not a business unless you're making money. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you can find yourself chasing money and getting further and further from the reason you started this business in the first place. You can, all of a sudden, you're doing, you know, in our case, a couple of years ago, we find ourselves doing all of these brand partnerships, and it was people, products that I use or things that I cared about, but it was to such a place that now we're starting to alienate the audience that we're so passionate about, because everybody wants us and we're so grateful to have the business and we've got a staff of people to support. And now all of a sudden our why, which is the audience that we're, you know, working to love on and give community to, now they're feeling frustrated and we've lost our why because we were chasing cash. So that's just a lesson that I like, really deep soul searching that we have done as a team. Like, oh, you know what? If we just keep going back to this thing that we believe in, that we're passionate about, which is women and how we connect them and how we give them the tools to change their lives, that will that will become the business, and revenue will come from that when we focus on it, and we can stop chasing these things over here because they are not relevant to our mission.
Mm-hmm. And now you had mentioned this earlier in the show too, when it comes to Pinterest, and I feel like Pinterest has been popping up here and there. It's been on podcasts, mm-hmm. and how it's a great, obviously it's like a search engine. How mm-hmm. have you guys been able to leverage it and help it increase profits and revenue in your business or traffic?
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that you said it, because very few people understand that Pinterest is not a social media platform. Pinterest is a search engine in the same way that YouTube is a search engine. And I say that as anybody who has, where you want to drive people to, you want someone to see your video, you want someone to see your product or your blog post or whatever it is, that you are mindful that you are posting it there, either YouTube or Pinterest, in search engine terms. So back in the day, we'd be like, this is so cute. You know, what does that mean? Nobody's searching for this is so cute. They're searching for black skinny jeans, fall work style. Like it's a very specific way that we search on Pinterest. And if you're not sure how to write your copy out, you can actually go into the search engine bar right now and either YouTube or Pinterest and type in the thing that you're about to save. So let's say that you're going to type in gold lamp. If you type that in, it's going to auto-populate, a drop-down is going to happen. It's going to auto-populate below 57 different search terms for gold lamp. Gold lamp, fancy living room. Gold lamp, bird. Clearly, I'm looking at the gold lamp in my office right now. I'll say this to you. But just really being mindful that you're putting things on Pinterest or on YouTube in a way that they are search friendly to people, because that's how they are going to find you. So we've used it. Obviously, anything that we put on the site goes on Pinterest, any YouTube videos that we have. And then it's been really powerful with the book. Pre-order is a huge part of books in this day and age. So we had a massive pre-order campaign, and all the quotes from the book are on Pinterest, and all the videos that we made. And if you click onto them, they're just going to immediately take you to the buy link. So it's like, oh, hey, was this powerful? Cool. Here's the book that you can go buy off Amazon right now.
I mean, would you say that your traffic, referring traffic, is coming, like what percentage comes from Pinterest? What just comes direct? Have you seen a shift?
Gosh, I would say for the last, 5 years, I would say that 75% of our traffic comes from Pinterest.
Wow.
Without question. And here's the thing that'll trip you out. It won't trip people out who are blogging or whatever, because they will tell you that this is true. The same 10 posts have been the most popular for my blog for the last 5 years. The same 10 posts. Because they are the 10 posts or the 20 posts or the however many posts that for me have gone, and I'm using air quotes, even though you can't see me, viral on Pinterest, meaning if you search that term, my recipe or my DIY is one of the first things that come up. So it's still driving massive, massive, massive audience to the site without us having to do anything. Now, certainly if I posted, you know, we finalized the adoption of our daughter a few weeks ago, and if I write a post about that, all of a sudden we'll get a ton of traffic through social. But 2 months from now, that's not going to be something that's still driving traffic to us. So it's like the 80-20 rule. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
But go ahead and explain it.
Yeah, so it's the idea. It's 80-20, 70-30, but 80-20 is the easiest way to say that 20% of your clients will provide 80% of your revenue. 20% of your posts will provide 80% of your of the traffic to your site. 20% of your products are going to be responsible for 80% of the money that you make. So there's tons of books on this idea, but it's basically how can you look at your business and try and just get it down to that 20%? How can you just focus on, you know, if you know that, like for instance, for us, a massive part of our ability to speak to our audience or the things that we do is book related. And for the longest time, you know, we talk about everything under the sun on social media. And then I happened to read The 80-20 Principle, which is a book here in my office. And I was like, oh my gosh, where is the bulk we have revenue coming in from all these places, but where is the bulk? And we figure it out and it's like, oh my gosh, we have so much revenue that comes from book sales and we don't promote them at all. These are the older books. We don't promote them at all. They're just making us this money. Gosh, what would happen if we actually put the marketing behind? Sounds so dumb. I know there are people listening to this that will roll their eyes like, oh my gosh, that's so obvious. But sometimes you get so
sometimes we don't think about it.
Working business, you forget to work on your business.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, sometimes like I was just having a conversation with another entrepreneur is that when we do things over and over for a certain amount of time, they become unconscious to us. And so we forget to even take a step back and look and ask ourselves the questions that then seem obvious to us, but we don't even.
Totally.
And maybe we asked ourselves in the beginning those things, but then we just got on a roll and it's like, oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a thing that's super relevant for me.
Yeah. To do that. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, this has been amazing. I do have a few last questions for you in terms of, I know you mentioned the 80-20 rule as a book. Is there another book that you've read that you recommend to people that just really made an impact on you?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm a massive, massive book nerd. I believe that leaders are readers. I read a minimum of 2 books a week and they're usually nonfiction. I'm like crazy. I'm bananas because, here's the thing that, forgive me if I've said this already, honestly, Amanda, because I can't remember. You're my third podcast today, so we can edit out this part. But if I said it already, you can edit it out. But I have a high school diploma. Like I don't have a college degree. I didn't go to business school. Every single thing that I know about business, about writing, about life, I learned in books and on podcasts and in a Google search bar. So I'm super passionate about reading as an entrepreneur because anytime I'm unsure of something, I find a book or I find 10 books until I can arm myself with that knowledge and have the courage to take on accounting or have the courage to try and scale my business. But I feel like knowledge is courage for me. Mm-hmm. So whenever I'm feeling unsure, I go read a book. So yes, do I have books for you? If you could see my office, right, I laugh that you just asked that question. So let me just tell you a few recent favorites I think would be super powerful. Yeah. High Performance Habits by Brendon Burchard.
Yes. Oh my God. I just finished that. And Oh my God. It's so good. And it.
Get out of here. It's so good. It's my favorite book of 2017. I honestly, people thought that I was getting like money back. I talked about it so much. I don't know him. We're not friends. I wish we were. But I think it is the most incredible book for just tangible advice. Super tangible advice, whether you're in business or out of it. I just read The One Thing, which is super good. Someone told me about this idea. It's by the guy who started Keller Williams.
Gary. And
it's So it's basically the idea of what's the one thing that you could do in your business that would make all the other stuff that you're working on obsolete. Like what would make everything else easier? If you just did this one thing, then all the other stuff would fall into place. So that was a really powerful one. I'm literally leaning over. I'm like, which are the other ones that I love? hold on. I'm looking at all my stacks. You're like, it's not that big a deal, Rachel. But I.
Oh, no, it's good. I mean, readers tell me all the time, or not readers. Well, I guess if they're reading the blog, but listeners are like, I love that you asked that because, and people take it to heart. They'll tag me on Instagram or tag Sheeta her way.
Yeah.
And so people listen and they, I get value out of it because there's books that I'm learning about.
So the other one I'll tell you is, I literally just walked over because I was like, I want to see which one that was. The 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth, which is, oh my gosh, I'm totally spacing on his name. Hold on, Rachel, the book's in the room with you and you could walk over there. And I love him. He's an incredible, John C. Maxwell. So John C. Maxwell has probably 25 books on business. And if you ever have the chance to hear him speak in person, you absolutely need to make that part of your day because he's incredible. And I wish he would adopt me. but 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth is just about personal growth, which is something I'm really passionate about. It's super easy to read. It's a fast read, but I think it'll challenge you to think through like, do you actually have a plan for your personal growth? Or are you just crossing your fingers and hoping it's going to happen? Because that's not how life works. Mm-hmm. So those, looking around my office right now, those would be my three favorites.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so one second to last question is, with everything that you have going on between your brand, your business, you are you got your whole family that you're doing, your book, everything. What are some of your non-negotiables? Like, how do you determine what you say yes to and what you say no to?
Oh, that's so good. So my friend Jen Hatmaker has this great quote in one of her books where she says, if it's not a hell yes, it's a no. If your initial gut reaction is not just yes, but hell yes, you shouldn't do it. Everything is going to pop up in your way. There's so many things that you could do, go this way, go that. And I think you really do have to trust your gut. So when it comes to life and the things that I want to do, I really pay attention to, you know, those things that are going to give me life, that are going to give me energy, that are going to make me feel good. And I understand that I'm also at a place in my career where, you know, back in the day, gosh, I would do anything. Like, I was like, I'll hustle, I'll do your party for a bucket of chicken and $5 gas money. Like, I was down for whatever. But I think if you are in a season where you're struggling to know what to say yes to, that's a really good litmus test for whether or not you should do something.
Yeah. And what you were saying too about earlier in the business, and I think this applies almost to anything, is that if we don't have that focus or that goal to get to where mm-hmm. then we find ourselves like, I want to be in the position where I feel more confident to side with the things that I say hell yes to versus no.
Sure.
I think it's the whole matter of setting goals, and we can reach them a lot quicker when we set them versus, like Brendan says, I think it was like having goals, or you can find yourself aimlessly around in your business and in life if you're not mm-hmm. setting intentions. So yeah, no, that's definitely, I love that. And then to wrap us up, tell us where my listeners can find out more information about you and connect with you.
Yeah. So I am Ms. Rachel Hollis, MS Rachel Hollis, on every platform you want to look at. And then probably the biggest thing going on is, you know, the book came out today.
Yay.
Which is, it's called Girl Wash Your Face. And I think for your crowd, if there's any interest at all, you should check out the Barnes & Noble edition, because the Barnes & Noble edition is actually called the Hustler's edition. Ooh. And it has a bonus chapter. So in Girl Wash Your Face, each chapter begins with a lie that I used to believe. Lies like, I'm a bad mom, I deserve to be treated this way, I am defined by my weight. And the Hustler's edition chapter, the lie is, good girls don't hustle, because I really struggled with the idea of, I love my job and I love my company and I'm so proud of it. And make no mistake, I have worked my butt off to get where I am. I have hustled so hard. And I come from a culture, a Southern culture, where that's not what good girls do. Good girls are looking, where I come from, you are looking for the man that you're going to marry. And he's going to have a great job and you're going to stay home with the kids. And I do not dog that in any way. It's just not for me. And so I really carried a lot of guilt around for years about the fact that I like to work. And so I wanted to write a chapter for other women like me who maybe are grappling with that, and just remind them like, oh, no, you're allowed, you're a grown woman, and you're allowed to do and dream and be whatever it is you want to be. And someone else's opinion doesn't matter. Someone else's opinion is none of your business. You just keep doing your thing and going after it. So so check that one out if you're at all interested.
Yeah, and we'll link to that in the show notes. And definitely going back kind of a full circle loop, that sometimes, I mean, if we listen to other people's opinions, then we wouldn't be where we are today.
Yes, right? So true. Yes, so true.
Rachel, this has been amazing. Thank you so much. I love it. We'll loop it back into the show notes. And then, yeah, I'm just excited to watch your growth.
I appreciate that, girl. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's podcast episode. For more information, check out shedidherway.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I would love for you to leave me a review on iTunes and let me know what you think. Until next time, keep doing it your way.